This is the Create Your Own Life Show, episode 698, with Jack Canfield.
The universe is constantly putting opportunity in front of us, and you got to walk through the door. People often ask me, what's my secret of success? And I'll often say that I actually followed my heart. I followed the intuition, the inspirations, the opportunities that showed up. So yeah, after teaching all these teachers, what happened was I was basically making my living as a trainer of teachers. And then during 1993, the first Gulf War that happened, all the education money dried up. There were no educational conferences. There were no educational in-service trainings. So we had to pivot very quickly. People are doing now with the coronavirus. You had to pivot and say, okay, we're going to go and begin to do public seminars. We're going to work with corporations. There's more money there, et cetera. And that's how I got into what I was doing. And then along the way, I was telling all these stories. I learned early on in the classroom that kids responded when I told a story. If I was telling them a fact, they would look out the window and be bored. I'd tell them a story, they were right there.
This is the Create Your Own Life Show, where we interview people that are world-class performers, from Super Bowl champions to New York Times bestsellers to billionaires. We figure out what makes them tick and unpack it for you to do the same. I'm Jeremy Ryan Slate, and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we help you to create your own life. Hey, what is up, everybody? Jeremy here. And welcome to episode number 698 of the Create Your Own Life Show. Our guest today is the legendary Jack Canfield. We're going to talk about his Success Principles workbook coming out many, many years after his original book, The Success Principles. But you may know Jack from his renowned as being the co-author for the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And he's also the author of 42 New York Times bestsellers, which absolutely blew my mind. And we're going to talk about Jack's core principle of personal responsibility and what that looks like. And I really, really love that because for me, I feel like that really just hits on everything I believe as well, which is really cool. We're going to take a look at how you can really create your future by asking the right things in the right way and asking with more confidence. And we're also going to take a look at Jack's personal story, which I'm not sure many of you actually know, as Jack was actually very successful in the education space and found personal development to try and help his students move forward and learn, and was then so successful he became one of the best-selling authors in the education space before he became a public speaker and best-selling author outside of that space, as he actually sold 400,000 copies of a book in the education space, which he told me at that point in time was absolutely unheard of. So this is definitely going to be a book that, or this is definitely going to be an interview you're going to want to check out, not to mention a book you're going to want to check out. But this is definitely going to be an interview that you are going to want to check out, as there was so much to learn from Jack. But before we jump into this interview, I want to quickly tell you about today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Audible. Audible is offering all Create Your Own Life listeners a free month of Audible and a free audiobook download. Right now, I am reading Confessions of an Economic Hitman, really about how the banking system and a lot of different things may be out to screw us just a little bit. So if you want to check out that book or any other book for free, courtesy of Audible, that's over at jeremyryanslate.com/book. That's jeremyryanslate.com/book. Also, do not forget to subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you prefer to listen to podcasts. And while you're over there, leave us a rating and a review, because I want to hear from you guys about creating a life on your own terms and really how it's helped you to move forward and helped you to have some really great success in your life. Today's review comes from Gavin, and Gavin says, authentic, great production quality, and truly authentic interviews. A little bit of cursing lightens it up. Well, that's only once in a while, Gavin. It's not all the time. Thank you so much for your review, everyone. If you want to hear your review read on the air, open your device to Apple Podcasts right now and leave us a review, or head over to ratethispodcast.com/CYOL. All right, everybody, let's get into this interview with the legendary Jack Canfield. Welcome to the Create Your Own Life Show, Jack Canfield.
Thank you. My pleasure to join you, Jeremy. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Jack, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I started it back in 2015 and I made a list of the top 100 people that I most admired. And you were one of those people on the list and we finally get a chance to chat. So thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Totally. And I do want to give you a shout out and an acknowledgement as well, because in 2016, we were in a really rough place in our business. We had a partnership fall apart and things hadn't really gone well. And you honestly were in a rush to get to the airport, but you still took a few minutes to talk to me before you, you know, ran to the airport. And it was very, very helpful to me in that time when I needed to receive that. And last year in 2019, our business doubled in size. And this year in 2020, it's on pace to 4x in size. So I just really appreciate you being willing to help me when I needed it.
Well, I'm glad to know that it helped.
Absolutely. So, Jack, I want to kind of just start out a little bit earlier than, you know, a lot of what everybody knows you for, because I heard in another interview, and I didn't really realize this. You know, first off, you have a background as a teacher. I was a high school history teacher for 3 years before, you know, I was doing everything I did now. And I read that you sold 400,000 copies of an education book, which in that world is a really, really big deal. So, you know, what led you from that to deciding that you were going to, you know, go into the speaking world and everything else?
Well, we share one thing in common. I was a high school history teacher too.
I have my master's in early Roman Empire propaganda, not a very applicable skill, but it was fun.
my undergraduate was Chinese history. So, but then I taught American history in high school. But the point being that what happened was when I was teaching, I realized that my kids, I was teaching in an all-black inner city high school, and I realized my kids weren't that motivated to learn. So quite frankly, I became more interested in how I could motivate my kids than I was in teaching history. And so I met a man named W. Clement Stone, who was teaching something called achievement motivation through his foundation. He was a good friend of Napoleon Hill. He was worth $600 million when I became one of his employees at his foundation to teach success. He said, I want to teach kids that success is not a four-letter word. So basically, I started teaching self-esteem building and goal setting and visualization and affirmations and all this stuff to teach kids how to have high self-esteem. And I succeeded. I was so good at it. The school district asked me to start teaching other teachers instead of teaching in the classroom. And eventually, I became an educational consultant. And during that period of time, I wrote this book called 100 Ways to Enhance Self-Concept in the Classroom. I was very lucky, Jeremy. I went with a company called Prentice Hall, who at that time had the best direct mail marketer on the planet. He would send out a flyer to every fifth teacher on a mailing list in Delaware for first graders. And if they responded, then he'd send all the first graders. Then he'd send all the first grade teachers, not the first graders, but first grade teachers in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Ohio. And he kept rolling it out. And so literally over a couple of years, we sold 400,000 copies of that book, and it launched my consulting career. I was speaking all over the country. I've spoken in all 50 states now.
That's incredible. I love that, like, because not a lot of people do this. Like, when given an opportunity, you absolutely you ran with it. And I think that's so vital, that when we do find opportunities in our life, and, you know, this is something that you talk about in your book, The Success Principles, is, you know, making the most of everything we're given. I just find that really impressive that you did that.
No, look, the universe is constantly putting opportunity in front of us, and you got to walk through the door. People often ask me, what's my secret of success? And I'll often say that I actually followed my heart. I followed the intuition, the inspirations, the opportunities that showed up. And so, yeah, after teaching all these teachers, what happened was I was basically making my living as a trainer of teachers. And then during 1993, the first Gulf War that happened, all the education money dried up. There were no educational conferences. There were no educational in-service trainings. So we had to pivot very quickly. As people are doing now with the coronavirus, you had to pivot and say, okay, we're going to go and begin to do public seminars. We're going to work with corporations. There's more money there, et cetera. And that's how I got into what I was doing. And then along the way, I was telling all these stories. I learned early on in the classroom that kids responded when I told a story. If I was telling them a fact, they would look out the window and be bored. I'd tell them a story, they were right there. And so I started telling stories. And then eventually I'm telling all these stories that became Chicken Soup for the Soul. Little did I know, people would come up and they go, that story about the Girl Scout selling 3,000 boxes of the Girl Scout cookies. Is that in the book anywhere? My daughter needs to read that. My sales team needs to read that. And I go, no, it's not in the book. And eventually I'm coming home on a plane one night and they go, I think the universe is trying to tell me, put all these stories in a book. So that literally became the first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, which radically changed my life.
Absolutely. Well, Jack, I know we're going to talk quite a bit about, you know, the Success Principles workbook that you have coming out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of your core values in the Success Principles is honestly one of my biggest core values. And that's the idea of personal responsibility, right? Like mm-hmm. in every single thing in our life, some way, shape or form, we were either responsible for it or unresponsible for that. You know, why is personal responsibility such an important core principle?
It really is the core foundation of everything. Either you take 100% responsibility and realize you're in charge of your life, or if you take less than that, you realize you're a victim. You're always blaming the government, your mom, your dad being an alcoholic, the economy, now the coronavirus, you know, whatever it might be, that's the reason you're not succeeding. So literally you have to go ultimately from victim consciousness to accountability to realizing there are principles in the universe, universal laws, if you want to call them. And when you start playing with those laws, as Reverend Michael Beckwith, who was in The Secret with me, said, you know, you start to realize you can manipulate reality based on these laws. So you go from being a victim to a manipulator. And then eventually you go from being a manipulator to going, wow, if there's all these laws, maybe who made those laws? Where'd they come from? And there's something bigger than you are. Like you can call it God, source, energy, intelligence, you know, whatever. And then you realize, wow, maybe I should start surrendering to a higher power, following my inner guidance, you know, not my will, but thy will. And so we meditate and we tune in and we go, well, what am I being guided to do today? But basically, 100% responsibility. Why 100%? You know, I always ask people when they ask me that question, how would you like to be married to someone who was 99% committed to monogamy?
That'd be a problem.
most people wouldn't want that. And so you want to be 100% committed to your own success, your own health, your own wealth, your own impact, the purpose that you've been born to live, your mission, whatever it might be. And I have a chapter in the Success Principles book, the original book, says 100% easy, 99% a bitch. Because if you're 99% committed to get up and run every morning, you have to decide, am I going to run today? If it's raining out, if it's cold out, you don't feel like it, whatever. But if you're 100% committed, there's no conversation. You just get up and do it. You know, like I'm committed 100% to brushing my teeth twice a day. And it's just called, I do that because I want to keep all my teeth. As my dentist once said, you don't have to floss all your teeth, just the ones you want to keep. I went, okay. So 100%, you probably know the story about Wayne Dyer, where Wayne was 100% committed to running every single day. And until 9/11, if he was on an airplane flying from Australia to the US, he would run up and down the aisle on the plane.
Well, I did because, not know that story. That's intense.
Yeah. And if he was locked in a hotel in, you know, Wisconsin, when it was snowing, he would run up and down the stairway of the hotel because he was 100% committed. And, you know, commitment and convenience. One of my friends, Lisa Nichols, who you've probably interviewed, says, you know, convenience and commitment don't live on the same block. And so we have to be committed. The people that are successful are the people that do it no matter what. I just wrote a foreword to a book recently called The Billionaire Secret. And this guy interviewed 21 billionaires. It took him 5 years to get to all those billionaires because they're very reclusive and they're busy and all that. But he got to them. And one of the things he noticed, it was a pattern, and I commented on this in my foreword, 21 people, 17 countries, aged anywhere from late 30s to, you know, 81 years old. Every one of them got up between 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning. Every one of them meditated. Everyone but one exercised every day. They all delegated really well. All the principles that I teach in my book, they were all doing. And so, and I came to those principles primarily by studying lots of successful people. And I noticed that these were the patterns across, whether they were a general in the army, a top, you know, podcaster like yourself, someone who was a best-selling author, movie star, Olympic athlete, whatever. It was these disciplines of success, and it was that commitment, you know, to get up every morning and do the work that has to be done.
I think that's vital, though, because I know even for myself, like I get up, I, you know, I hit the bike, I, you know, work out, I have that cold shower, like all that stuff has to happen in the morning, because number one, you make that commitment to yourself before you do to anybody else, which is super important. But number two, you have to set yourself up in the right space to be able to help others, right? Like if we're not in a right space, we can't flow help to others. It's just not going to work that way.
Yes, you have to be, you know, I teach something in the morning called the hour of power, which is 20 minutes of meditation and gratitude and visualization, that kind of stuff. 20 minutes of reading or listening to like a TEDx talk or something like that, if you're not particularly a reader. And then 20 minutes of exercise, high intensity, interval training, get on your bike, whatever it is. Now, usually I do more than 20 minutes and all those things, but if everyone has got an hour. And, you know, now we've got a whole country sheltering in place, as it were. So that time you used to go on the commute, whether it was on the subway or the train or whether it was you were driving to work or not, you've got that extra time. So no one has an excuse anymore. And if you do 20 minutes of reading, 20 minutes of meditation, 20 minutes of exercise, you're going to be healthier, wealthier, and wiser. And, you know, you're now going to be awake. You're not going to get sick. You know, when your immune system goes up, when you do all those things, we now have some meditations that we know increase the immune system by 100% if you just do them 7 days in a row. So this is a good time to be doing that. And we know if you're meditating, you're putting yourself in a high vibration. It's hard for viruses to grow in a high vibration. If you're eating healthy, you know, if you're eating an alkaline diet, if you're exercising, getting your body heated up, because, you know, viruses don't live in heat. This is why I do an infrared sauna every couple of days, why I fast every once in a while. So the exercise does that as well. So all the things, I just started doing the cold showers. I just discovered Wim Hof not too long ago.
It's pretty cool. Like you feel like you're like drank a pot of coffee, but you're not shaky like you did.
No, it's more than pretty cool. It's pretty cold. You know, are you kidding me?
well, Jack,
it energizes you, and then you have the energy to do the kind of work that you and I do. I mean, I'll be 75 this summer. Everyone says, God, you look 15 years, 20 younger, years younger than that. You're going full tilt. You're, you know, doing all the things I do, but it's because of the disciplines.
Well, Jack, we've talked quite a bit about the idea of personal responsibility here, and we've talked about a bunch of different things around that. And I like to say that it's one of the scariest things when you realize you're totally responsible, but it's also one of the most empowering things. But that also comes down to when you start to be more responsible, you start to actually make more decisions, right? You don't stick on, like, well, maybe I won't, maybe I will, maybe I won't. You actually decide. And one of the things that you teach in your workbook is there's actually a way that we can become more decisive and we can make, you know, better decisions. What does that look like?
Well, you just asked me a question I'm not even sure I ever have the immediate answer for. That's never happened before. Well, the main thing, I think, you know, I have a chapter called Decide What You Want. And I think that most people don't do that. Most people don't sit down and ask themselves exactly, what is it that I want to have in my life? And if you don't start with the idea that you're 100% responsible, meaning that you can see everything you're currently experiencing is based on the decisions you made in the past, the thoughts you thought in the past, the actions you took or didn't take. Once you realize that, then you realize my future is going to depend on the decisions I make now and the actions I take now, the choices I make now. So basically, in the third chapter of the book, we talk about decide what you want, and literally to sit down and say, okay, let's make a list. First of all, what are all the things I don't want? I don't want to be poor. I don't want to die too young. I don't want this. I don't want that, whatever. Then immediately go to, well, what is it that I want? Because you don't want to get stuck in not wanting something, because then you're focusing on the thing you don't want. And then basically creating a vision for having those things. What would it look like if I had that? And getting very clear. You know, a lot of people say, I'd like to be wealthy. Well, what does that mean? You know, I decided early on that wealthy for me meant I had $30 million invested paying, you know, at least 6% interest, which would give me $1.8 million a year income, which after taxes would leave me with a little over $1 million to live the lifestyle I wanted to live. Most people never sit down and think that out. You know, what does your lifestyle look like? Are you going to have a boat, a private plane, a house, you know, this kind of car? Are you going to, you know, live in a commune, whatever it is? You need to be very specific about that. And a lot of people don't do that. So it's important to get really clear.
Well, I was actually just speaking to your co-author, Mark Victor Hansen, and his wife last week about the idea of like asking for things, right? And one of the things that you've talked about is the idea of, you know, asking with more confidence and not awkwardness, because I think sometimes people are just afraid to ask, Jack. Like, how do we do that? Like, how do we ask for things in the right way where it's not coming off as needy or awkward or something like that?
Well, it's always valuable to tell people why you're asking, for starters. So know that there's something you want. Be very specific about what it is. Like if you say, I want more help with the housework, nobody knows what that means. if you say, I'd like you to wash the dishes Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday night and put your own laundry in the laundry and put it back in your room when you're done, now we have a specific request. If I'm asking my boss, you know, don't just say I want a raise. Say, look, here's the deal. This is what I've been doing. This is why I think I deserve a raise. I would like to this much. Tell me what I need to do that I'm not aware of in order to qualify for that. So be very, very specific. Another thing is make sure you ask the right person. You know, a lot of times we're asking someone who's not really authorized to give us what we want. I can remember asking for an upgrade on American Airlines once, and a woman said, I'm not authorized to do that. I said, who is? She said, well, my supervisor. I said, well, can I talk to your supervisor? And I talked to the supervisor, and she gave me an upgrade. The funny part of that story is I was in Nashville once asking for an upgrade to come back to L.A., and I said, I was using every technique I knew how to get what I wanted. And finally, this woman said, Mr. Canfield, we all watch your videos as part of our training here for American Airlines. I know the techniques you're using on me. They're not going to work today. There are simply no upgrades available.
That's great.
But you know, but if you tell people why you want what you want, that often will help you get what you want as well. I'll tell you a funny story. Patty Aubrey, who's one of my business partners and now the president of my company, we were down in San Diego doing a training, and we went out for dinner, and we had no reservations. We'd forgotten to make them, and we're walking down this street with a lot of restaurants. We went by this Italian restaurant, big glass windows in the front, looked really great inside. And I thought, let's go there. But by the time we got to the entrance, there was a line of about 15 people standing outside. And me, who teaches this stuff, said, oh, Patty, we'll never get in there. And she said, watch this. So she goes up to this young girl, probably about 18, 19, who's the concierge, you know, the maitre d'. And she says, you see that guy standing over there? Yeah, he's my boss. Did you ever hear of Chicken Soup for the Soul? Yeah. He's the author of that. Did you ever read any of those books? Yeah, I grew up on those books. Well, I just bet him $100 I could get into the restaurant. Now, if I lose that bet, I'm going to give him the $100. If I win the bet, I'll give you the $100. Which would you rather I do? And she said, I'll take the $100.
That's so great.
Sometimes you have to ask in a creative way. No, not everyone has $100 to do that. I grant that. But the point I'm saying is anything's possible if you ask. And I think, you know, one of the things Mark and I taught, because we wrote a book called The Aladdin Factor, which was about asking as well, was, you know, you've got to ask. Be willing to ask repeatedly. You know, our book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, was rejected by 144 publishers before we got a yes. So I always tell people, if I'd given up after the first 100, I wouldn't be talking to you today, Jeremy. You wouldn't know who I was. I wouldn't be living in the house I'm living in. And, you know, so Mark and I always, we almost wrote a book called Ask Like a Kid, because if you have a kid, says, Mom, can I have a cookie? No. Mom, please, can I have a cookie? No. Mom, come on, please. I'm going to die. My blood sugar is going to go low. I'm going to fall over, hit my head and die. Mom, please. No, it'll ruin your appetite. Mom, I promise I'll eat dinner. No. Mom, please, come on. All right, have a cookie, you know? So if you go back and you ask over and over and over, you never know. Like, for instance, just to give you an example for people listening right now, you may, if you were at a multi-level marketing network marketing company and you asked your brother to get involved a month ago, he might have said no. Now that he and his wife are sequestered at home and they're not making the normal money they make, maybe because they do, you know, she's a cosmetologist who can't be touching anybody right now. Maybe he can't be out selling the same way. And so all of a sudden you ask him again and they go, wow, is this something I can do from home? Can I call people? Can I enroll them? Is the product going to be shipped from the warehouse? I don't have to warehouse anything. All of a sudden, there's a different reality where if you ask again, people will say yes this time.
Hey everyone, are you looking to grow your brand, bring in new business, bring in new followers, and take advantage of the podcast medium? I want to tell you guys about what I've been doing the last 2 years at commandyourbrand.media. We actually help people not only find the right podcasts and get them booked on it to grow their brand, sell their products, or launch a new book. We also take you through our storytelling process to really help you impact the people you talk to, so you're going to see better results on that. We also put you through a program as part of that to teach you what to do with an interview after it's live, because you can create even more action. So if you guys are interested in this, want to check it out, want to start growing your brand on podcasts, I actually have a free offer for you guys where you can actually get a worksheet that's going to help you locate podcasts and start working this whole thing out over at commandyourbrand.media/checklist. That is commandyourbrand.media/checklist. Well, I'm laughing when you're talking about asking like a kid. I have a 1.5-year-old, and she's got a few basic words now, and they're usually things she wants, and she's learned the sign language along with them. So one of them she learned is more. So she does this, more, more, all the time until she gets more. Or she sees me open the fridge every time, and this is, you know, what cheese looks like. So she'll go, cheese, cheese, until she gets cheese. So it's like, I get it, man. Like, they don't stop until they get it.
It's true. And they're very creative. They'll say to you, Dad said it's okay if I borrow the car, if it's okay with you. Now, they haven't talked to Dad yet. And then they go to Mom, or they go to Dad and say, Mom said it's okay if I borrow the car, if it's okay with you. And the other one says, well, if it's okay with your dad, it's okay with me. I mean, you got to get very creative. You know, one of the things I do in my live trainings, Jeremy, is I ask people to stand up, think of three things that they could ask for that would help them achieve their breakthrough goal. Like a breakthrough goal, and we talk about that in the book as well, is how do you set a goal that if you achieved it in 1 year would be a total breakthrough for you, like take you to a new level, you know, 2 times your income, that kind of thing. You know, writing a book is one of those things, having your own podcast like YouTube would be one of those things, getting Microsoft as a client or Uber or Lyft or something like that. So what happens is I have them think of three things that they could ask for. They could ask for money. They could ask for mentorship. They could ask for you to be their client, you know, whatever it might be. And they have to mill around. And they're just milling around asking people, will you give me this? Will you give me this? Will you give me this? And you have to count on your hands. You come up to me and you say, you know, will you write a foreword for my book? And I say no. And then I ask you, will you give me $100,000 so I can start a training program in Afghanistan? And you say no. Now we count how many no's we give away. So I'm counting, I gave away 1 no, 2 no's, 3 no's, 5 no's, 7. When I get to the 10th person, I have to say yes. And we mill around for about 15 minutes doing that. And at the end of the, I stop, I say, okay, how many people got a yes? 99% of the people got a yes. Some people got 8 yeses. I say, what did you learn? And they go, it's a numbers game. You don't have to take it personally. Person wasn't in the position to give me what I wanted. I don't have to stop after I get 5 no's and go, this will never happen. Just like with Chicken Soup for the Soul, 144 rejections before we got a yes, but only took 1 yes to make Mark and I multimillionaires.
I love that too. And I guess just one of the stories you got me thinking about here in my own life, my wife a couple years ago went to Italy, a trip with her mother, and didn't realize the data was on in her cell phone. So I get a bill in the mail for like $450 because her phone was on the whole time she was there. And I called the cell phone company and I talked to the customer service person. I can't help you. Hey, I totally get that. I understand you're just doing your job. You don't have that authority. Like, let's talk to your manager. So we're on the phone with the manager. Manager says no. I'm like, okay, cool. Who's your boss? So now two of us are on the phone with the manager's manager, and they say, oh, yeah, I can definitely help you with that. And the charge gets dropped, and we all helped each other do it. It is about, you know, asking the right person at the same time, not making that person wrong if they can't help you. Because I think a lot of times people tend to jump down the throat of the wrong person.
Yeah, there's a good story about that that I have in one of my books where this woman who is a co-author of a book with me, Pamela Booner, we wrote a book on tapping, how you use tapping to deal with all the negative thoughts that come up about the success principles. It's called Tapping into Ultimate Success. And she was trying to get a plane from Nashville to Florida where she was headed to do a gig, and his flight was canceled. And so people were coming up and just yelling at these people. I can't believe it. I've got this thing. I'm going to miss this meeting, my kid's birthday, you know, whatever. And finally, she came up and said, I know you're really hassled right now. This must be really difficult for you, all these people yelling at you. If there was a way to get to Orlando or Tampa or wherever it was today, what would you advise? She says, well, there's a United flight that leaves in an hour. I think they have a few spaces. Why don't you run over there real quick? So as soon as you get mad at people, they're not on your side. But if you ask them a question, say, now they're on your side trying to solve the problem. You know, what would it take? What advice would you have for me? How could that we make that happen? All of a sudden, now they have to come up with an answer rather than just say no. And so that's one of the ways to get more of what you want in life. And I always say, if people say no, one of the great questions would, what would have to happen for you to be able to say yes? And they'll often say, my boss, or give me an hour, or give me 5 minutes. You know, lots of times people say there's no tables available. When I ask them that, they'll say, give me 10 minutes. Let me see what I can do. And they'll find a table.
I love that. Well, Jack, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I read somewhere you have 37 New York Times bestselling books. So you can correct me if I'm wrong on that number, but I'm interested to find, like, how have you found the ability to write like that? Because I know a lot of people, they're like, I have a message I want to get out there. I struggled in getting out there. For you, what's helped you to be able to get your message out in the written word?
Well, I have 42 New York Times bestsellers.
Thanks for the correction.
No, it's not, trust me, it's irrelevant. But the point being that I schedule time to write. In other words, one of my mentors a long time ago was an Australian novelist who basically said, you have to glue your bum to the chair. In other words, if you have to think of writing as a job. And so the first thing for a first-time author is, how do you get over the fear of just not having the ability to do it, or you're not going to do it right, or whatever? And I teach people to do what I call vomit copy. Just get words on paper. Don't worry about editing it as you go the first time. And now we have things like Rev and Otter where you can just talk and, you know, it writes it, you know, you get a transcript back immediately. One of my friends, Lynn Twist, who runs the Pachamama Alliance, I said to her, you got more great stories than anyone I ever know. You need to put them in a book. She said, I can't write a book. I said, yes, you can. I said, here's what we're going to do. You're going to come to my house. I'm going to invite 10 or 12 of my friends over for 2 days. We're going to sit in my living room and you're going to tell stories. We're going to record them on one of these, I forget what it's called now, Mevo. We have a Mevo in the room. We'll record it. And then we'll just send it over to Rev and we'll have a transcript back by the end of the week. And so she talked for 2 days nonstop with lunch breaks and, you know, bathroom breaks. And we got back, like, I don't know, 400 pages of copy. And now she has a book. And so if you can talk your book, you can dictate your book, you can have someone interview you to know what you know. You could tape one of your talks if you're giving speeches or your webcasts and, you know, things like we're doing today. And then you can edit it. And what I like to do is, and I did this with all the Chicken Soup books, and I did it with the Success Principles and the Success Principles Workbook, is once I get it to where I think it's good, I give it to at least 20 people. With Chicken Soup, it was like 40 people. And it was like Republicans and Democrats, rural, suburban, and urban people, black, white, and gray, you know, whatever. We want people of every color, every religion, every persuasion. Read this book. Give me feedback. Tell me what doesn't work. Grade each story on a scale of 1 to 10. Cross out stuff you think is dumb. Tell me where I was redundant. Tell me where I'm confusing, you know, whatever. And so we take all that feedback in, and then we basically have a book. The first Chicken Soup for the Soul book, I rewrote 6 times. I had 6 different versions of that book. The last time I went and I sat in a room at a ski resort in the summer, so it wasn't cold out, but I knew it would be cheap rooms there. And I read every story out loud. And if it didn't sound right, if it didn't come trippingly off the tongue, as one of my actor friends says, I would edit it. And so basically, it's just sitting down and either dictating or typing and then getting copy and then letting it sit for a while, come back and edit it. And then there are external people can give you feedback. You can hire editors if you want. But the main thing is just to commit to it. I always tell people, if you write 5 pages a day, which takes a couple of hours, or even 250 words, which is 1 page. If you wrote 1 page a day, you'd have a 356-page book at the end of the year. If you write 5 pages, which I can usually do in a couple of hours, you know, I can turn out 5-6 books in a year. And with Chicken Soup, remember, I didn't write all the stories. I was just editing a lot of them. In the first book, there was a lot of stories that Mark and I wrote. But then after that, it was mostly other people. And almost every one of my books, Jeremy, is co-authored by somebody. So I write the first chapter, you write the second, we trade, we edit. So I find that makes it a lot easier for me to do it. And then you've got someone to bounce ideas off of, like Mark and I did for years, and Mark and Crystal did with their book.
Very cool. I want to kind of bring this back around to you a little bit, Jack. I know we've covered some amazing things here. And if you were to take a look at Jack at 21 versus Jack now, I guess what's one thing you believed then that you don't believe now?
Well, I didn't believe much when I was 21. I was a typical Midwestern kid who just wanted to go to school and graduate and get a job and all that. I was not exposed to any of this until I was probably about 24. I was sitting in a laundromat minding my own business while I was in graduate school for becoming a teacher. And this guy came up to me and said, put your book down and talk to me. So I did. And he invited me to go to this lecture series with him, which was up in Evanston, Illinois. It's called the Living Philosopher Series. There was a guy there that was the head of the National Center for the Exploration of Human Potential. And he said, you're only living 10% of your potential. You're only using 10% of your brain. And I went up and I said, I want to use more. Tell me. And he sent me to the W. Clement and Jesse V. Stone Foundation, which is where I started learning all this stuff that we've been talking about. I took 17 weekend workshops the first year and 32 weekend workshops the next year. I was like just a junkie, you know. I was just like so hungry to learn all this stuff. It was meditation and thinking and philosophy and Tai Chi and yoga and, you know, whatever it was. I was a sponge. And as a result of that, you know, I became a human potential trainer and a psychologist for a couple of years and ran a growth center, like, you know, retreat center like Esalen or Omega. And I think when I was 21, I believed that the rich people screwed everyone over. As my dad had taught me that, you know, being kind of a union guy. And I didn't think I would be able to be as successful as everyone else was, you know. I was fortunate that I had a rich aunt who sent me to a private school when her son named Jack died, but I was surrounded by all these kids whose fathers were doctors and lawyers and the editor of the newspaper and the owner of the steel mill. And so I felt less than, and it took me until I was in my 20s when I started doing that work to develop my self-esteem, my self-worth, my beliefs that anything was possible, my understanding that, you know, thoughts are things and we can make things happen. Start reading Napoleon Hill and all those books back then. And, you know, now all the people, there's so much more resources now. When I started out, there was about 20 books. Now there's thousands, you know.
Well, I guess looking at it then, like for you personally, what's the biggest skill that you're always consistently working on? Like what's the thing you're always trying to work on improving?
Good question. I would say my presentation skills, my sales skills, my marketing skills, being a better husband. You know, I don't think I was the best husband in the early years or the best father. I was young, as in my 30s, late 20s, early 30s. And I was just trying to make a living. I was on the road a lot, as you are when you're a speaker. And I wasn't there for my older kids the way I could have been. I did a lot better with my youngest son and my grandson. And so relationship skills, you know, starting off way back when with Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, you know, and still learning. My wife's constantly educating me. You know, one of the techniques that we teach in the book is ask for feedback early and often is the name of the chapter. And I teach a question I learned from Dan Sullivan, which is on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the quality of, and then you fill in the blank, our relationship, this podcast, me as an interviewer, my book, you know, me as a boss, whatever. And I ask my wife that every Sunday night if I'm home. If I'm not, the next night I am home, whenever that is. How would you rate the quality of our relationship this past week? And I usually get good scores, but I got as low as a 4 once. And the follow-up question is always, what would it take to make it a 10? And she said, well, it'd be great if you'd put the kids to bed without asking, you know, me having to ask you, because I get up in the morning, wake them up, your job's to put them to bed. And I don't care if the NBA playoffs are going on. I don't want to have to remind you to go do that. You know, nothing's worse than in the middle of an NBA game, you have to go and stop and put your kid to bed. And then, can I have another drink, Dad? Yeah, you'll see as your daughter gets older. But anyway, and then she said some other stuff. Oh, don't interrupt me when I'm telling a joke because you think you can tell the punchline better, which I can, but I've learned that's not a good thing. And then thirdly is she said, do you know what foreplay means? And I said, yeah. She said, well, you might want to revisit that idea, you know. I said, okay. And, you know, who knew that sex had gotten a little mechanical, but, you know, so we improved our sex life. But what I'm saying is, whether it's in business or in your personal life, because the book, the Success Principles Workbook applies to all areas of your life. You know, if you don't ask for feedback, you don't know how you're doing. So feedback is what made the Chicken Soup for the Soul book so well, because on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the story? How would you improve it? The same thing with my spouse, with my kids, with my staff. We ask that, you know, every month on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the quality of working here like for you? If it's not a 10, what would it take to make it a 10? And these are the things that allow us to continually getting better. You know, Tony Robbins has that phrase, CANI, C-A-N-I, constant and never ending improvement. So if we're not constantly improving, And you know, this goes back to your original question, where are you constantly working to get better? And I think my relationships is one. And then the other things I talked about with my business.
I love that because I feel like it just becomes a way of being if you're constantly trying to improve like that. I think that's huge. And to your point about putting your kids to bed during the NBA playoffs, I know during football season this year, I'm a huge Notre Dame football fan and my wife has had some seminars and stuff like that on the weekend. So I've had to watch my daughter and have her actually watch Notre Dame football with me. So, you know, one night my wife comes home and my daughter's going, touchdown, touchdown. And you've been hanging out with daddy much too long. So trouble. Like she watched the Super Bowl this year. And this, I think the Chiefs scored about 7,000 points because every 2 minutes she just went, touchdown, touchdown.
That's very cute. That's very cute.
Well, Jack, just
there's that wonderful movie, Meet the Fockers, where the little kid learns to swear. So I can totally relate, you know. That's fun.
Well, Jack, just as we're winding down here, you know, if we were far in the future and you could really sum up your legacy with a quote on your tombstone, what would that look like?
Probably would say something like he cared and he made a difference. My life purpose statement is to inspire and empower people to live their highest vision in a context of love and joy. And so, you know, given that I've trained literally millions of people, I've given workshops live in 52 countries now and all the states in America, and I've got books in 57 languages around the world. I think I'm achieving that. I'm not done yet. One of the things I'm doing right now is training trainers to teach my work. We've trained over 3,500 people and certified them in 107 countries online to teach the success principles. So I would love my, or, you know, maybe it would say, well done, and it would say God underneath, you know, like a testimonial.
Well done, my good and faithful servant.
There you go. There you go.
Cool. Very cool. Jack, this has been incredible. Once again, the book is The Success Principles Workbook, an action plan for getting from where you are to where you want to be. You know, where can we find out more about you? Where can we find out more about that? And you also have a special offer for our audience as well.
Well, you can find out more about me and all the trainings and things I do at jackcanfield.com. If you want to take advantage of the bonuses that are available for the book, you can go to thesuccessprinciplesworkbook.com. The Success Principles Workbook.com. And there, in addition then to being guided to buy the book, either at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever else you want to do it online, you'll also be available, qualified to get three bonuses. One is a 10-week video coaching course by me that you can download. You'll get every week you'll get a new 10 principle that we cover in the book, and it'll give you a little homework assignment for that week to do. Secondly, you'll get the first chapter of the book downloaded immediately so you can start before it's delivered to you. And third, we're doing a masterclass. I'm going to do it several times, and we're also recording it, where I'm going to be teaching some of the key principles of success. Like I do, you know, when I go to corporations, they pay me $35,000 for a 1-hour keynote or for a couple hour seminar. And I'm going to be doing that for free, part of the masterclass. So you'll also find out how you can enroll in that. So that'll be available to you as well. SuccessPrinciplesWorkbook.com. And here's what my staff always says to say: for less than it costs to buy 4 cups of coffee at Starbucks, you can change your life.
4 cups of coffee. Well, Jack, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Create Your Own Life show.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate it. This was fun. I like you. This was a good time.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for hanging on me and Jack today. You can check him out over at jackcanfield.com. Also, be sure to pick up his Success Principles Workbook, an action plan for getting from where you are to where you want to be. So I totally recommend you check that out. You can find that on Amazon or find more information over at jackcanfield.com. You can get the show notes for this episode and the quick way to link to any of the resources mentioned in this episode over at jeremyryanslate.com/698. Also, do not forget to subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. And while you're over there, leave us a rating and review because I want to hear from you guys about creating a life on your own terms. All right, everybody, have an amazing, amazing day. Now get out there and go create your own life.